My name's Eric. I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have a list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and understanding. Hyla will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Hyla. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Jessica will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Jessica. I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Maureen will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Maureen Roberts. I'm an alcoholic. Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Tradition two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Tradition three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Tradition four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Tradition five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Tradition six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Tradition seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Tradition eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Tradition 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And Tradition 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is two 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Russell.
I'm Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Let's see, my home group's the Atlantic Group. My sponsor's name is Frank. My sober date is July 16th of 2000, and I'm working steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. And I got to tell you, I've done this a few times. It never gets any easier. I'm real grateful I'm here. I want to thank Duncan for asking me to speak and, you know, keeping me on his hit list. He asked me a couple of months ago, and I said, well, I just spoke, you know, at the end of last year. So he held off for a couple of months, and now here I am, and I was hoping you'd forget, too. So anyway, just let me see. You know, it's been great. I've been around here for a few years, and it's true what they say. My life is beyond my wildest dreams, and this has been a rather entertaining summer for me, shall I speak, personally speaking, and I've had to lean on a lot of people. I had to lean on a lot of people in the rooms. I had to really work the steps. And, you know, it's all the stuff I'm doing today is based on the stuff that I learned my first year here. You know, praying to God, saying the serenity prayer, trying to push expectations out of my life because expectations will kill me, you know. And, you know, expecting people should behave a certain way, and they never behave the way that I want them to. And, I'm like the actor running the show. If, you know, everything would be perfect if everybody did things my way, and they never do. And it's where I have to work, you know, page 449 of the third edition of the Big Book. Acceptance is the key to all my problems. And this isn't, you know, the stuff I'm going through today isn't forever. It's only temporary, you know, and everything that I have going on here is only temporary, and it's what I bring to the table that makes all the difference. And, you know, it's, you know, bringing the sober alcoholic to the table instead of, you know, trying to make it all about me. You know, there's whatever situation it is, sticking myself in the middle of it and, you know, making it about me. And, you know, it's not what it's about, and it took me a long time to go ahead and learn that. You know, a little bit about my past. I'm going to steal a line from one of the founders, Van. To keep it short, I'll start when I was five. And, you know, I came from, I guess, a regular house. You know, like, so, you know, I'm a product of a divorce. My parents split up in the 70s. Yeah, I remember that far, and I keep thinking, wow, that's like 30 years ago. Anyway, they split up in the 70s, and you know, my father, I guess, had a bit of a drinking problem. He stopped drinking, you know, when I was about... You know, when I was about 10 or so, but I just remember thinking, you know, riding with him in the passenger seat of a pickup truck or Volkswagen. I grew up in Volkswagen buses. My parents weren't hippie, but we had plenty of Volkswagens around. And, you know, but he had this habit of driving around with a can of beer between his legs, and I thought that was the greatest thing. And I put a lot of practice into that in the future. And, I was the kind of drinker where, you know, I'd stop and a beer bottle would roll under the brake pedal, so I'd have to kick the beer bottle out of the way before I could stop the car, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, I'd stop and you'd hear things clinking underneath the sink, underneath the seat of the car, and that was me 100%. And, you know, if I did a day without drinking, it was like a major achievement, you know, and I'd have to reward myself the next day by drinking twice as much. And no matter what, you know, I was the kind of drinker, I don't remember when my first drink was. I just know that I liked it. I you know, maybe it was around 10. When I was around 11 or 12, you know, my father always had a six-pack in the fridge, and you know, I remember really nagging my mother. I found out that if I nagged her enough, I'd finally get my way. And, you know, so there was a beer in the fridge, and there was a, you know, I was from this small town in upstate New York, not far from Albany, I guess about an hour west from Albany, a little town called Ephrata, and there was a roller rink in town, so that was the thing. Friday and Saturday nights, you'd go to the roller rink, and I loved going out Friday and Saturday nights. Even though, yeah, I'm like a 10 or 11 year old kid, and my mother, but there was a can of beer in the fridge, and I wanted it. I'm like, Mom, I want that beer. Why, at the age of 11, am I begging my mother for a can of beer? Is, you know, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, I'm like, Mom, I really want that beer. And she's like, tell you what, you know, if you lay, I'll give you a choice. You can either have the beer or I'll pay for you to go to the roller rink. And being the good budding alcoholic that I was, and of course, I chose the beer. And that was it. And I figured I'll worry about the roller rink later. You know, it's kind of a perverted way of applying one day at a time, you know, the way that I saw it. I'll worry about that problem later. I got the beer now. And I took the beer, and I that's my story all the way. And so life goes on. You know, I barely get through high school. I attend some college. I flunked out of college. It was all about getting loaded, and that was it. Just putting whatever it is I could into my body at whatever time. As soon as it was okay for me to drink, I'd go ahead and drink, and somehow I'd stagger into work the next day. And I wound up doing this program twice, shall I say. I stopped drinking the first time around 1990. I was around 25 or so, and I stayed sober for a couple of years. I did, I guess they call it the two-step. You know, I showed up to meetings, and I never kept a sponsee more than a week because I didn't have anything to offer. I didn't work any steps. I didn't do anything along those lines. Finally, they'd leave. And then finally, after about 4 years, I just stopped going to meetings, and then I went out and drank. And let me just say, it doesn't get any better out there. You know, if I can say nothing else to anybody who's counting days or thinking, man, I'd like to have a drink, or maybe this program isn't for me, maybe I'm non-alcoholic or whatever, you don't see too many people coming in here by accident, right? And it certainly was no accident that I was here at the time. I just didn't have the tools for a living. I didn't have any living skills, and so I went out and drank, and it was amazing how fast I went back to where I was and then some. It's like it was exactly like I kept drinking through all the years I wasn't drinking, and it was insane. I couldn't believe it, and finally got to the point where I didn't know what to do. I couldn't live with the thought of drinking, couldn't live with the thought without drinking, just like it says in the Big Book. And finally, I remember thinking along those towards the end, oh, I'll go back to the meetings, I'll get the sponsor, somehow I'll fix this, and I couldn't fix it. Nothing was working. And again, I couldn't put a day together without a drink. And as soon as, you know, I'd wake up, the same old story, I'd wake up with, you know, with a pounding hangover, oh, I'm not going to drink today, I'm not going to, you know, whatever. And then around 3 in the afternoon, I feel a little bit better, and people at work would be annoying me, or you know, I'd owe money, I didn't pay the rent, and just, you know, just the problems I would think about in my head, the obsession of the mind would kick in, and the next thing you know, I'm drinking again, and that's it. And I just, there was nothing I could do. And finally one day I woke up and I was beaten. And so somebody gave me a number to call, and this is out on Long Island, this is out on the East End, and so I called up this guy, and the idea of Alcoholics Anonymous, the way you hear about it, and when you go out and 12-step somebody, you get another guy, and you go over and you pick up the drunk, you pick up the man on the bed, or whatever it was. And the guy who was going to take me to the meeting, he didn't have a car, he had a bicycle, and it was kind of raining out. So he's like, well, can you come and get me? Because I don't have a car. So, you know, I had to go over to this other guy's house so I could get 12-stepped into the meeting. And I'm glad I did. I guess it's just a sign, yeah, sure, okay, I'll come over and get you. And that's it. I mean, that night I met my sponsor. All these people around, they're like, yeah, new guy. He's got like less than a day, less than 24 hours. There's a couple of people in the room here that were there that night, and I was surrounded by all these guys, and finally they get tired of talking to you, and they all drift away, except for this one guy. It was his first night ever out in the Hamptons. You know, maybe, you know, he was looking to hang out with people, go dancing or whatever, and he got me instead. And he's my sponsor this day, Frank D., and now, thank goodness. And he's like, Tuesday night, you go to this meeting. And he's like, Monday night, you can go to this other meeting. But I didn't follow direction, even though that first day I went to a different meeting, what he pointed me out to. And, you know, because it was more convenient to me, but he's like, you got to go to Tuesday night. So I went to Tuesday night, my third day or whatever. Yeah, I guess it was my third day sober. And it's been it ever since. And it got me into the steps right away. And the thing that I found out about this meeting is it's service. You know, you stay sober by doing service, no matter. And this alludes to I guess the first minute or two of my talk. No matter how bad things are, I can always show up and help somebody out. And I just remember the first, you know, in my first 90 days, after about a month or so, I went emotionally into the toilet. Everything else was fine. I still had the job. I guess I had a little more money because it wasn't, you know, spending it in a bar or whatever, but I just felt horrible, and I just showed up and I helped make coffee, or I did whatever I could, and you know what? It just, I felt better. You know, I felt better, and then as I got a little bit further into the steps, I started to find out the makeup, you know, the personal makeup, you know, what gave me the thoughts of drinking, you know, what were the roots of my resentments, how can I go ahead and make it right into the world. And I gotta tell you, all that stuff that I use today, I learned within my first year, and it's just keeping it up. I've had the opportunity to make a lot more meetings, and I took it, you know. And this is to all the people who are counting days or what have you, or in their first year, oh, gee, do I have to go to meetings the rest of my life? And again, today, I just wake up and I say, wow, I think I can make that meeting today, and I'll go out and I'll make it. And maybe I'll fold a chair, or, you know, I'll say prayers. I pray all the time at work, you know, God, give me a serenity. Thy will, not mine, be done, especially in an office environment. I really need it. And it's applying the tools, you know, to my everyday life. And, you know, by no means am I a saint. You should see me behind the wheel of a car during a traffic jam. But, you know, it's great. It's a heck of a lot better than I am today. And I'm really glad I'm sober, and I'm grateful for everybody else keeping me sober today. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Melissa.
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Grateful to be here. Very nervous. I'll just get started. My home group is the Atlantic Group. I got sober on January 22nd, 2007. My sponsor is Holly S. And I'm working steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. And thanks, Jen, for asking me to speak. It's really an honor to speak at my home group. You know, I didn't, you know, just nice to be asked to be of service here. And as my sponsor reminded me this morning, it's nice that I can actually show up for things today, because that wasn't the case a year and a half ago. And that's one of the gifts of this program that I've received, is, you know, just being able to show up, saying, you know, yeah, I can do that, you know, and showing up and suiting up and all that. So. Okay, so drinking, why I'm here, you know, I grew up, I had a great family, and for all intents and purposes, things were really great, you know. And when people say in this program it's an inside job, I really relate to that, because for me, the outsides were always okay, you know, smiling face, you know, the job, keeping it together, everything's cool. You know, but then as my drinking progressed, things got worse, and I was really, you know, I was dying inside, and I was, now when I look back at it, you know, just trying to sort of blot myself out, because I didn't want to feel, essentially. My drinking really took off after I graduated college. I got a job, first was a workaholic, so I didn't really have time for drinking, because I was constantly working. And then I'll just tell this one drinking story, because it kind of describes my drinking from that period on. I got a promotion at work, and I was there 2 years. I got this promotion. I moved into the city, and it was my first week living in the city, and we had this training for you know, people I supervised, and it was the first day of training was over, and people were working on their like sort of seminars or workshops for the next day, and they said, oh, you know, we're gonna go to the bar and finish up working, you know. And it was like, really at that instant, you know, like they say in the book, I had arrived. Like I thought, wow, you know, like this is the job for me, you know, like how great is this? So we went to the bar and you know, had a few drinks and did the work, and you know, and then just like, you know, 5 years later, the people who didn't have a problem could have a couple of drinks and go home. And for me, it was never the case, you know. So I, of course, stayed with the people that continued to drink. And we just continued to drink. And I went to the next bar with the next people. And I'm totally new to the city, totally new to this group. And just following these people around who I barely know. But, you know, I'm following the drink. And at the time, of course, I didn't know that. But now I do. And long story short, I get, you know, it's 4 a.m, you know, next thing I know, next morning I'm supposed to be there at 8 a.m., you know, with the bagels, I have the first workshop, and the next memory is my cell phone ringing, I wake up, I'm on the floor of someone's apartment, I have no idea who they are, and it's 11 o'clock, and, you know, this is basically my second day on the job. And, you know, and that was really like the story, you know, and I got away with it. And, you know, fortunately I worked with people that drank just like me, and, you know, and that was okay. And that really, you know, that worked for me for a while, but in the end it was just, you know, let's go out for a drink. And that was always my intention, you know, was, yeah, let's go out for a drink, you know, but it was never one drink. It took me a really long time to figure that out. And again, just that pattern of going to the bar, the people leaving, and me staying and never being able to get back. And, you know, I lived way uptown. I worked downtown. So if it would get too late, I would just sleep in the office because that was just easier. And, you know, I made the mistake of telling my mother that, and, you know, she nearly died, rightfully so. But I thought it was normal. Like, that was my thinking, was like, oh, you know, like, everyone's doing it, and, you know, it's just, like, easier. You know, I could just wake up and, like, you know, brush my teeth and get started. You know, and I'm probably there earlier than I would have been if I had gone home. So, like, this is a good strategy. So that's the way things went until, like, you know, it wasn't fun and it wasn't funny and thank you. And, you know, life was miserable. Fortunately for me, I worked with someone who had this inkling that, you know, maybe we have a drinking problem. And she shared this with me, which, you know, I said, yeah, you know, come back home. She was traveling. We'll have a drink. You know, everything's fine. And anyway, she started going to meetings and she wasn't drinking. And that was the first, I guess, moment of grace for me. That was like this wake up call of, wow, you know, like she's not drinking. She's, you know, moving on. She has a life. And I couldn't get out of the bar. You know, I just couldn't get out of the bar. And another amazing gift from God was a friend of mine who all of you know, Amanda, who I went to college with, who got sober when we were in college, you know, drinking up a storm. And she was such an amazing example of this program. And she never, you know, when they talk about attraction rather than promotion, I mean, that was exactly it for me. You know, it was like, we knew she was an AA, but, you know, there was no talk of, you know, she wasn't trying to 12-step me through our friendship. But certainly that example for me was the best thing, because I thought to myself, wow, you know, she's sober and she has a life and she's really happy, you know, and she does all the things that, you know, I want to do. And, you know, this doesn't look so bad. And so when things got really bad, I didn't call her. I texted her like a good passive aggressive, you know, I think I have a drinking problem, you know. And then, like, of course, you know, was so mad that I did that the next day, but she came over and she just told me, like, you know, they say in the book, just like, you know, described her experience and what it was like for her when she couldn't take a drink or when she drank. And, you know, I totally related to that. And then she suggested I stop drinking for 30 days, which was, you know, impossible. So I laughed and I said, you know, that's not going to work. You know, what else do you have? And she said, okay, you know, how about have two drinks a night and then, you know, and then stop. So I thought, okay, maybe I could do that, you know. So every day, and this is the insanity that I realize now, that obsessive thinking about the two drinks right when I got up. So what were the drinks going to be? Where was I going to get them? You know, and just right out of the gate. So that lasted for 4 days, and I would always hit my two drink minimum. And then in the end, it was a wreck. And so anyway, so after a bunch of months, she suggested I start coming to this meeting. I said, okay, you know, I'll come. So I came on Tuesday night, and that's why I love this home group, because I came here and I just heard a message of hope, you know, and that's what I just hope to share with you tonight quickly. I know I'm probably running out of time, but, you know, just people whose lives had changed here in these rooms, and that things get better, and that, you know, this isn't the end, it's just the beginning. And because of that message, it just kept me coming, you know. And when finally things got bad enough, and by coming around, I met my sponsor. So on my first day, I had a sponsor, you know, and I started working the steps with her, and I call her every day. And I started to, you know, develop a fellowship, and now I have a service commitment, which, you know, helps you get hooked in, especially with a big group. You really start to get to know people. And, you know, that's really, you know, the most important thing. If I can convey anything to the newcomer, it's that things really do get better. and you're in such a great place. I remember Stephanie said that to me when I got here, you know, you couldn't have landed in a better place. And that's what it is, you know, we're like landing, you know, it's like, oh, you know. But thank God, you know, because I landed in the best place, and there's such good sobriety here, and people are just so wonderful. But it's, you know, and it's just those simple things. You know, for me, it's been, you know, working the steps, calling my sponsor every day, thank you, doing service, and showing up no matter what, you know, and especially in the beginning. You know, you don't want to come to a meeting. You don't want to call your sponsor. I couldn't pick up the phone. Like, I didn't, you know, my voice messages were full and all this, but somehow, you know, the grace of God got me here, and then, you know, just continuing to do those simple things, really your life changes. And today, I mean, things are just, you know, so great. I couldn't imagine my... You know, it is like your wildest dreams, and it's all these little things that you could have never imagined, and when you get them, they're just fantastic. So thank you so much for letting me do service.
My name is